life involves change. As we grow older, sometimes feel wiser, sometimes not. As we are in relationships and they change over time, or the relationships themselves change from one to another. So learning to manage change well is to our advantage. We are facing possible changes here in BC with the provincial election next May. This congregation is experiencing change as your co-ministers, Melora and Shauna, and their daughter Athena have welcomed into their family a new member, their baby boy, Demetrius. And since your ministers are away on maternity leave for 3 months, the beginning of your church year is different than it usually is. It means, of course, you have more guest ministers, like me, coming to visit. And, of course, the seasons are changing. With the official end of summer this next Saturday, we feel autumn in the cool evening air. As with any change, there are upsides and downsides. To make the most of the changes we're experiencing, I want to explore how we manage change in our lives, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, and physically. The more aware we are, the more we can be the change we wish to see in the world. Some of you may recognize that saying from mugs, bumper stickers, magnets. It's inspired by, but not a direct quote from Gandhi. As I read in our opening words, Gandhi wrote, "If we could change ourselves, the tendencies in the world would also change. We need not wait to see what others do." I believe if you try to act in a way that's in line with your principles, then you are more likely to see those principles influence those around you. The more people who do that, the more positive change comes about in groups, and the more such change occurs in groups, the more positive influence those groups can have on society. Since one of our Unitarian principles is about us humans being interdependent in the web of earthly existence, what each of us does affects others. Being the change you wish to see applies to us as individuals, as families, and, of course, as a congregation. So let me share some ideas about how humans manage change. As individuals and as groups, we often will choose ways of behaving that will perpetuate what we've experienced. Usually it's done unconsciously. If we continue acting as we usually do, maintaining the status quo, it actually takes less energy, and we can go about our day following our daily habits and patterns. Because it's familiar, and therefore less uncomfortable, we feel less anxiety. And who wants to feel stressed out or uncomfortable? So we humans often stick with what is known and predictable, unless there's a compelling need for change. These behavioral patterns form a type of psychological system. If you've ever heard anyone refer to family systems theory, what I've described about the patterns of human behavior is a basic premise that underlies that theory. It applies not only to family, but also any group of humans. After all, there's a reason we talk about something being familiar. When we face change, we react emotionally. We may feel extra energy, which is a natural bodily reaction to make us alert so that we can manage what's coming at us. Sometimes that energy translates into excitement, and sometimes it takes the form of anxiety. When we're not aware of it, anxiety can shift onto something totally unrelated to what's actually happening in our lives, the change that is causing that anxiety. Remember the story of the man who gets yelled at by his boss? He comes home and yells at his wife yells at his son, and the son kicks the dog. So most of us don't want to have to behave like that. So during times of change, it's useful to become more aware of our reactions. Are we reacting in a way that's reasonable, considering what's going on? Or are we getting very pissed off about something that really isn't a big deal? Notice how you are when you're driving during major changes in your life. If there is more emotional energy around something than seems appropriate, we may want to ask ourselves what's going on for us. Are we afraid to face change? And in that way, we can avoid any feelings that come up. In the roller coaster of change, we may initially go through that downward motion through what we often describe as difficult feelings. Shock, sadness. We may have the survival reaction of fight or flight. We may pine for the good old days. There may come a time when we feel, along with the feelings of loss, a need to let go. Even feelings of detachment and distancing from others. We may avoid contact with the source of the changes, whether avoiding coming to church if that's where significant change is happening, or avoiding a friend because she's taken up with a new beau that you don't particularly get along with. This avoidance can lead to a point where we either decide to stay engaged and stick out the change, or we decide to let go. Whether that letting go is of a feeling, like resentment, letting go of a person or a group, or letting go of an attachment to how we think things should be. Once we decide to stay or go, the roller coaster of change goes back up. We begin searching for the new, exploring options, getting information, and finding new purpose. Hope returns, and a renewed sense of attachment and excitement. These are normal reactions to change. Smaller changes may evoke milder versions of these feelings, and larger changes may evoke stronger versions. But the basic ride down to the bottom and back up again stays the same. More than likely, what I've said so far is not new, and you recognize the roller coaster. Some of you may remember when you were searching for your new ministers a couple of years ago, going through that emotional roller coaster, especially the high when you finally called two gifted co-ministers to come and serve with you. It's useful to recognize that humans aren't just afraid of change itself. They can be afraid of the amount of change, the fear of too much change, and the fear of too little change. The fear of too much change is the fear of being out of control, writes Gilbert Rendell in his book, Leading Change in the Congregation, Spiritual and Organizational Tools for Leaders. If you're interested in the book, I know where there's a shortened version on the web. If you want to know more, talk to me after. People are afraid that if we change too much or too quickly, then something important will be lost. Therefore, when people resist change, or at least want to slow down, it is a natural reaction to a concern that things will get out of control. But if things change too little, there can also be a fear of loss as well. That is an aspect of change that we may not think about very often. One change consultant uses this image. You can't steer a parked car. When the brakes are on all change, people also get concerned. Deeply rooted patterns of how things should be done may also be stopping a group from growing. Sometimes we need to experiment and try out new things for there to be growth in who we are. For example, in an age when our youth and young adults are so used to the high-tech world of computers and iPhones and text messaging, what mediums do we as adults use to communicate with them? I'm only getting used to texting. I'm a Luddite, It takes a long time for me to move on to new technological tools. I've learned, however, that it's more effective than phoning to get a hold of the young adults in my world, especially if I want an immediate response. Maybe some of you parents or grandparents understand that. I still don't understand some of the abbreviations. Mind you, I get the LOL, laugh out loud, right? But what about MWAH? MWAH. When I first read it, I thought it was mwahaha, you know, the sinister laugh. But my 11-year-old niece in Calgary explained to her Luddite aunt that it's the sound of a friendly kiss on the cheek, pronounced like the French, me, moi, moi. So I can now end my texts to my niece, moi, signed with a kiss, and she'll remember my affection for her. If we don't accept that change is happening all around us, we may miss opportunities for connections and for experiencing the world in a new way. Living with the shifting balance between change and non-change is a real challenge. So how can we equip ourselves to help us manage the change in our lives, at work, at home, and in the life of this congregation? Knowing that there's a natural emotional roller coaster is part of it. Intellectually, if we're able to understand some of those concepts and some other assumptions, they will help us when we or those around us emotionally react negatively to change. And as we remember the concepts, we may start to modify our behavior towards those changes in our lives. Rendell points out one such intellectual concept. It's the distinction between the idea of leadership and management. Both are needed, but for different things. So when do you need leadership in your family or workplace or church, and when do you need management? So what do we mean by leadership and management? Warren Bennis and Bert Namus, two well-known consultants in organizations, provide this succinct definition. Managers do things right. Leaders do the right things. To manage something is to try to ensure that things are running smoothly and effectively. It looks at how things get done. To provide leadership is to ask if what we're doing are the most important things. Of course, we both need both management and leadership, and many managers are also good leaders. But if we focus on just on managing things smoothly, we may miss the boat. Stephen Covey tells this story about managers and leaders. You can quickly grasp the important difference between the two if you envision a group of producers cutting their way through the jungle with machetes. They're the producers, the problem solvers. They're cutting through the undergrowth, clearing it out. The managers are behind them, sharpening their machetes, writing policy and procedure manuals, holding muscle development programs, bringing in new, improved technology, setting up work schedules and compensation programs for machete wielders. The leader is the one who climbs the tallest tree, surveys the entire situation and yells, "Wrong jungle!" But how do the busy, efficient producers and managers often respond? "Shut up! We're making progress!" This reminded me of a few times in church life, I must say. I hate to say sometimes when I was the leader, sometimes when I was the manager. Of course, we can't get good leadership to arrive at good outcomes if we don't have good managers helping. And we can't get good management to arrive at those good outcomes if we don't have good leadership giving a sense of direction. I understand your congregation this last year exhibited both good leadership and good management by facilitating an inclusive process to create a mission statement, the one we read earlier. I found it inspiring when Melora sent it to me. It names the core of your community's purpose, spiritual growth, creating a diverse community, transforming oneself and the world through compassionate action. This mission statement can serve as a touchstone when making changes, and when your ministers return, together you will decide what that mission is going to look like as it is embodied during this next year and in the years to come. In this last part about change, I want to share four assumptions Rendell suggests we keep in mind as we go about changing. One, we are seeking new learnings, not following old rules. How do we do this? It helps to know how adults best learn. It goes in a circle. We do, we reflect, we connect, and we decide, and then we go back into the cycle of doing. Rendell suggests adults learn best when they pause after doing something to reflect on what they just did and what they learned. This new learning is enriched when they then connect their new learnings with previous experiences and insights that can help to inform their reflection on what they just did. Then, with this new learning in place, they make a decision about the next steps and then implement those steps in doing. Too often in meetings, when we try to make a lot of decisions in one evening, we spend most of our time in the decide-do part of the cycle. We try to squeeze in 8 meeting decisions in a meeting and then need to figure out who's going to do the things we've just decided on. To be effective managers and leaders, we need to spend more time in the reflect and connect part of the cycle. Rendell's second assumption. Change will produce conflict, which is good and not to be avoided. Now, some of you may be thinking, what? Conflict? I hate conflict. Now, I like Rendell's definition. That conflict is 2 or more ideas in the same place at the same time. He explains, conflict is not necessarily a fight, but it is the engagement and working out of differences. Working with the differences, different ideas that produce conflict, is good in a time of change. Out of conflict, of more than one idea, comes energy, motivation, clarity, and direction. Without such conflict, which is the engagement of differences, it's very hard to responsibly meet a changing future. All too often, people have a very limited repertoire for dealing with differences. They center their efforts on persuasion and winning. I don't know about your congregation, but I know that for many, finances are often a place of conflict. I think that's probably true with couples and families too. There are various ideas about how to spend the annual budget. In one congregation I worked with, we decided to begin our budget conversation by reviewing our mission and overarching goals on how to live out that mission. We could then discuss the options of how to allocate our resources using the mission and the plan as our guide. Our discussions became less about one person trying to persuade the group to choose his or her project, and more about the group clarifying which options they believed moved us most in the direction of our goals. This approach funneled our energy into excitement about the coming year's plan. Rendell's third assumption. We need to appreciate experimentation and failure. Now, this can be a real challenge when we're feeling tension during times when we're exploring the differences among us. Yet, if we are to grow in depth as people, as couples, and as communities, we need to take risks trying new things. It might be a new way of spending time together as a couple, rather than just falling on the backup plan, get a movie, watch TV, flop on the couch, relax, which I'm not criticizing. I find it a very enjoyable way to spend an evening as well after an exhausting week. But you might try something new. For example, have a date night every couple of weeks and take turns deciding on something different to do. Keep an open mind. Don't criticize. Experience it together and see what ends up interesting you both. You'll be surprised what things you learn about someone you thought you knew well. I asked Liz, my service liaison, to give me an example of experimentation in your congregation. She described how you experimented in ways to recognize joys and sorrows in your Sunday morning service. Now you're lighting candles one week and then clouti tying with strips of cloth the next. It's an intriguing compromise. You kept a treasured way, and you've included a new way that addresses an environmental concern about using up too many candles. When we try out new things and we have success, that's great, and we feel very happy about the experiment. Alternatively, when we try out new things and we fail, or it doesn't quite turn out as we'd hoped, we can still learn from that experience. And it gives us valuable information about what to try next time. After all, if scientists didn't experiment, fail, reflect, and then try out a new thing, would we ever have found the cure for polio? Or been able to have a successful landing of the space rover on Mars? What an accomplishment that was. Rendell's fourth assumption, leadership is, essentially, a spiritual issue. In our lives, we seek to act from our principles so as to better create lives, better lives for ourselves and our neighbors and our children. When we are considering what we want to change in our lives, we can remember Stephen Covey's story. In this crazy 21st century North American society that we live in, are we walking through the right jungle? Do we instead need to put our heads together and ask the questions about how we are living, what we are putting our energy and resources into, and ask if that will lead us toward the world we want for future generations? Whether we're looking at our individual lives and changes that are happening there, or the changes in our congregations, I hope we'll remember that emotional roller coaster, the difference between management and leadership, and consider Rendell's four assumptions. We are seeking new learnings, not following old rules. Change will produce conflict, which is good and not to be avoided. We need to appreciate experimentation and failure. Leadership is essentially a spiritual issue. If we practice these things within the values and principles we hold as a congregation, we can become better at building our beloved community here. Then we will be more likely to be the change we wish to see in the world. I look forward, during the coffee time and fellowship time after the service, to hear from you how you have had success in changes, both in your lives and in this congregation. May such changes bring you energy, vitality, and meaningful growth. Amen.